How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. A new attitude, a new message, an updated plan could mean a new life for corn-based ethanol. And our Dairy Week coverage continues with an update of a real export success story.
Live from the land of crew-cut cornfields via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we continue to move on through Dairy Week with Kevin Ross from the National Corn Growers Association, then its former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack from the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and right after the news, Sonia Begeman from Farm Journal. She's our seed and production editor. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Another cool day here in the middle of the country, isn't it?
Yes, yes, a cool day.
It feels like
we got
like
that Fonzie weather pattern over us, the Fonzarelli
right.
pattern.
Hey,
it's cool.
Is that what you're talking about? Oh, okay.
That's exactly
I love the flat top reference there. That
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was
crew
good.
Cut cornfields, Chip. Hey. It's
yep,
true.
Giving the country,
turning and burning,
giving the
turning and
a
burning.
New look, a new
yep,
look.
Yep,
no doubt.
That's good.
No
you
doubt.
Know,
yeah.
I'm thinking it's maybe not a bad idea. Like you know, I shaved my head a few weeks ago, and
yeah.
I thought to myself, if I do this just once a year. I mean,
yeah.
imagine the savings. Imagine the savings.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just going to shave my head once a year.
Yeah. No, when I saw it, I thought, what is he thinking?
Oh, you got to do it once in a while. It's manly.
You do? You know? You do?
Yes. You oughta.
I'm telling you, we've got a great show. Vilsack recorded the conversation with him yesterday afternoon. He was really, really good and does a great summary of what's going on with the exports. And then Kevin Ross, he's got just one more day left as NCGA mm-hmm. president. We'll get a recap of what has been a wild year for him. All right, let's get to the news. What do you got going?
Yeah, let me start you with some highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update. That's for the weekend at September 27. Corn, 75% mature, 15% harvested, 61% good to excellent. Soybeans, 74% dropping leaves, 20% harvested, 64% good to excellent. Cotton, 66% opening bolls, 13% harvested, 43% good to excellent. And here comes winter wheat, 35% planted, 10% emerged. Anything stick out to you there?
Not really. Everything's right on track. And I mean, as long as the corn crop is still standing, you've got to call it excellent at this time of the year, I would think.
Mm-hmm. The first of three presidential debates will take place tonight between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. Viewership is expected to be high, possibly surpassing 2016's record-setting 84 million viewers. The debate will focus on six topics, including COVID-19, the Supreme Court, the economy, election integrity, and the recent protests across U.S. cities and the Trump and Biden records. According to The Economist, since 1976, the average change in the incumbent party's poll rating from 2 weeks before the first debate to 2 weeks after the last one, Chip?
Yeah.
0%. And as I understand, they will not be wearing masks during the debate. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to Chris Wallace. I think he should do a fine job of it. Not afraid to push back on either candidate.
Mm-hmm. The Environmental Protection Agency foresees legal issues about California's plan to ban new gas-powered cars starting in 2035. California Governor Gavin Newsom's mandate would strain the electric grid, said EPA Administrator
really?
Andrew Wheeler. Yeah. In a letter to Newsom on Monday, Wheeler said, quote, California's record of rolling blackouts, which are unprecedented in size and scope, coupled with recent requests to neighboring states for power begs the question of how you expect to run an electric car fleet that will come with significant increases in electricity demand when you can't even keep the lights on today.
Okay.
Seems like somebody mentioned something like this like a week ago.
Well, yeah. Now, since then, I've done some more research. Any
okay,
new
fair
house
enough.
That's being put up must carry the solar panels to make that house self-sufficient for a year.
Okay.
Okay.
The, right.
There's that, but mm-hmm. otherwise, I'm going with Bob Bertzel from Northwest Missouri.
Yeah?
You know, buy stock in generator companies because everybody's going to own a generator.
Well, a South China Morning Post article says China is, quote, miles away from meeting its purchase commitments under phase one, while China's buys of some politically important U.S. goods like beans and cars and corn have risen. The article says these buys have, quote, failed to significantly move the needle toward meeting the purchase commitments under the agreement. Through August, China has bought less than one third of the goods it has committed to purchase, according to that report from the South China Morning Post.
Hey, to me, that's moving the needle. Yeah. Because one third, and I understand that we're getting into the final quarter of the year, but when we were, you know, 3 months ago, maybe even less than that, we're thinking there's no way that China's even going to get close. You know, it's moving the needle.
Well, and it's weird that the South China Morning Post would say something like that. Right. What's the CCP up to?
Right.
The House has forwarded a stimulus bill to the tune of around $2.2 trillion. Details released indicate the measure would include aid for ag producers, including assistance for culled livestock.
Yep.
The bill also includes spending for biofuels, textiles, restaurants, airlines, schools, and the SNAP program. Yep. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is expected to speak to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin about it this morning. Democrats hope the new proposal could woo Republicans to come up from their $1.5 trillion bottom line. The Trump administration has yet to weigh in on the proposal. Chip.
Yeah, we'll go over some of those details at the end of the show. Right now, let's bring in Sonia Begeman. She is the Seeds and Production Editor for Farm Journal. How you doing, Sonia?
Hey, Chip. Doing great. How are you?
Good. Tell us about Extend Flex approval here. What does it mean?
Yeah, so we got exciting news yesterday morning. The European Union gave the okay, the import approval for Bayer's Extend Flex soybeans. Now, what those are is it's not just a dicamba and glyphosate resistant soybean. It's dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate, also known as Liberty, is one of the brand names of it. So, particularly exciting this year that it happened because, as you know, we're still waiting on the dicamba decision to know whether or not farmers will even be able to spray. And so, farmers who wanted to use, you know, have that Extend option, but still have a backup just in case. This kind of gives them that backup because they can spray Liberty no matter what. That's still okay to spray. Right. They can still spray glyphosate. It's just the dicamba that's up in the air. So this triple stack is kind of a new option. We're seeing lots of tweets about it over the past day and a half here. Just a lot of people who have been planting it, you know, in the test plot type things who are pretty excited. And of course, all of the Bayer people are super excited about it. It's the European Union is a big, you know, importer of our soybeans. So that was the last critical approval that we needed to see those be able to be planted.
What if dicamba doesn't get the approval?
Well, that is the big question right now. And Bayer is apparently listening and heard farmers asking those questions. So right now, for at least the company Bayer, they are offering money-back guarantees if dicamba does not get approved by February 20th, 2021. It's a $40 per unit reduction for cotton and $3 to $7 for Extend Flex or Extend soybeans.
Gotcha. Sonia, that's a story that you've been tracking for a long time, and I know that we're going to be looking for more updates ahead. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, that is Sonia Begeman, Seeds and Production Editor for Farm Journal. Okay, what's this new age ethanol policy? We'll talk with Kevin Ross from NCGA about it next.
This special edition of AgriTalk is celebrating Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dedicated dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Check out dairyherd.com/dairyweek for free access to our virtual content, sponsor showcase, and more exclusive resources. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health and coverage brought to you by additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition.
From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back. It's Dairy Week here on AgriTalk and at Farm Journal. But tell the girls to hold on and wait. We're gonna talk about something different here for just a second. Thank you, ladies. We appreciate that. It's good patience there.
Settle down.
All right. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson. And right now, let's bring in Kevin Ross. He is the president of the National Corn Growers Association. Kevin, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm good, Chip. How are you guys doing?
We are doing dandy, doing dandy. Before we talk about your term, let's talk about this Next Generation Fuels Act. Because, Kevin, when I saw this, I thought to myself, my gosh, this is something that I can get behind and can get behind this in a big way.
Yeah, absolutely. The Next Generation Fuels Act is something we've been working on for quite a while. And first of all, I should thank Representative Sherry Bustos from Illinois for introducing this bill and getting this thing moving. We've put a lot of work into researching the future of the fuel market and what we think is potentially the next step for the ethanol market. And really, it paves the way for higher blends of ethanol to get in the fuel supply. And for us, that translates into about 5 billion gallons of ethanol. Extra market share, as well as 1.7 billion bushels of corn, is what that translates to. Right. And so for us, that's a big deal for the corn market. This isn't something that happens overnight, and this is not an easy bill to pass. This is something that changes, a lot of the way we look at fuels and what we can do there. But I think it's also a line in the sand for us, Chip. This is something that says, hey, we're ready to grow this market. And we're also, we're not satisfied where we're at.
Well, the automakers, the engine makers are going to have to get behind this as well, aren't they, Kevin? Because it will take the next generation of engines in order to use this fuel, but it gets us that much closer to accomplishing the environmental goals that they're trying to accomplish with CAFE standards that, quite frankly, we can't accomplish with CAFE standards, but we can with this new generation engine.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We look at this thing through a couple different lenses. You can use, higher blends of ethanol than E15 right now in flex fuel vehicles and through flex pumps. But this really, paves the way for us to get to higher compression motors. And really, it speaks to what you're talking about, getting to these, getting to these CAFE standards, which are the long-term fuel mileage goals for the nation that have been set by the government over the years. And I think, at the end of the day, ethanol is such a great fuel, such a clean fuel, and what farmers are doing to produce the corn that makes the ethanol. I tell you what, buddy, this is something that, we should all be proud of and continue to fight for a long time. This market is something we need, and liquid fuels are going to be around this country for a long time. We got competition, but we're ready to fight it too.
Yeah, I want to talk about that more here in just a second, Kevin. But one of the things that I appreciate about the New Generation Fuels Act is that it addresses the petrochemical aromatics that can also provide octane. It's just that they're dangerous as heck.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are other ways to provide octane, but ethanol is the cheapest to produce, and it's the most green source that you can produce it with. And so, there's just so many benefits to it, not just from the production side and what we know we've gained, in our production practices as well as corn yields. But from the environmental side, from air quality, and that's the thing that, got us a lot of help with the original RFS. And I think if we keep that lens in mind and look at the partners that we've got to take to get this thing moving, those are the things that we've got to talk about to move this type of a bill.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, everything that we're talking about in this Next Generation Fuels Act, it struck me over the weekend, is exactly why major exporters of crude oil and refined fuels, like Saudi Arabia, import U.S. ethanol. It's because of the environmental benefits. It's because it's the cheapest octane, cheapest and safest octane that's available. They've got to have an oxygenate in their fuel to fire it up and get her going. And ethanol is the answer here, man. It just makes so much sense to go down this path as the next, I guess, the next path on promoting and sustaining a market for ethanol, Kevin. I think it's exactly where we should be going.
I totally agree with you, and I think for me, it preserves the work that we have and the need that we have for markets, as well as talks about the future of the internal combustion engine. And there's a lot of things that I think we can be proud of where that thing's gone in 100 years. But obviously, there's still improvements we can make, and this higher compression motor and this discussion around. What we can do for the future of fuels and motors, I think, is a key piece to talk about for hopefully a short time, and we can get some action on this thing. But not a lot of days left in the legislative calendar, but this really gets the conversation started for us, and excited to have this thing introduced by Representative Bustos for sure.
Well, and it seems like the legislation really got the attention of the ethanol industry very quickly and got a bunch of supporters behind it.
It has. We've worked with a lot of the groups. Yeah. All the groups have been well aware of this thing and have had input to it. And there's certainly different aspects of the industry that like it better than others. But we hope we can bring everybody on board in this thing and make sure that we've got this thing moving in the right direction with all the all the support of the biofuels industry. And if we can do that, that's a heck of a good start. And then we got to bring on other partners along the way.
Yep. Okay. Competition from EV. You know what's happening out in California. Newsom calling for no new car sales that aren't electric in 2035 forward. That competition from EVs and the preservation of a liquid fuel market, Kevin, it is a challenge that's ahead, but boy, the EVs face lots of challenges too, don't they?
Does the word brownouts come to mind? I don't know.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's interesting. The electric vehicle is obviously competition for us, and that's no question. And there's a place for them too. But at the end of the day, there's the internal combustion motor is something that I think is going to be around for a very, very long time. I don't see that changing anytime soon. And if you look at the infrastructure across the U.S. for liquid fuels, and if you've had a chance to travel much at all, you quickly realize how built out we are for that type of a system, and just that it's an important piece of our economy, an important piece of the way we move goods and services and people. And I think there's, like you said, there's competition, but they have a lot of challenges, and I think we're scratching the surface on some of those challenges and what they may be for them.
Kevin, it's been an interesting year for you, my friend. Starts with defend the RFS, takes you to E15, and here we are at Next Gen. You've been at the helm of NCGA during one of the most impressive and aggressive years of defending ethanol that I can remember, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, and it doesn't stop either. There's just so many things going on with that particular fuel and the benefits that it has for the growers across the U.S. Again, as well as the regular citizen that's out there from other aspects of consumers and air quality. But we're going to fight for that every day, all day long at NCGA. And have we had to have some tough conversations? Absolutely. But those don't stop. And I think when you look at the attacks that you're going to deal with from the oil industry and your competitors, whether it's them or EVs, we've got work to do, and we've got to continue to fight for our markets as corn growers, and that's a big one for us, as well as our other partners in animal ag and exports and things like that. But I've had a lot of fun this year, and It's been an absolute privilege to lead this organization and lead the folks that represent the folks that you know, I get a chance to be a part of as a community from agriculture. And just, you know, all I can say is we, you know, did our best, and we're turning over the reins to John Linder, and John's going to do a great job for NCGA. And I get to step into the chairman's role and be the old wise owl in the corner, I guess.
Did you say wise owl or wise? Okay.
Yeah. Well, there might be some of that too. You know me too well, Chip.
That's right. Kevin, you raised the bar for the role. I appreciate everything that you did. I appreciate you making yourself available to AgriTalk listeners as much as you did. Congratulations on a great year, sir.
Hey, thank you very much. And excited to see, you know, this organization move forward. But appreciate your time as always, Chip.
Absolutely. That's Kevin Ross, the outgoing president of the National Corn Growers Association. We've got Tom Vilsack next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your dairy operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. Rumensin is a trademark of Elanco or its affiliates.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, some pressure on corn and soybean futures again here this morning. What's going on?
Well, soybean market, we had a daily export sale announced to Mexico this morning, but it wasn't China. And so I think that's probably a little bit on the disappointing side. We saw a 1-point uptick in crop condition ratings yesterday afternoon. Onset of harvest, or the picking up of the harvest pace, and you know, the funds are really heavily long right now and peeling off some length into USDA's reports tomorrow. So I think that combination is putting pressure on the soybean market. Corn, you know, it's kind of just trading in step with soybean so far this morning. Not a lot of news there, so we're probably seeing the funds peel off some length in that market as well. But we are holding above yesterday's lows. If that support gives up or falters, then we're probably going to see a little bit of an increase in the selling pressure in the corn market.
Yeah, we're watching that 63 level, 363 in December corn. Winter wheat futures holding in there pretty well this morning.
Yeah, kind of a mixed tone right now in SRW contracts. They have been trading to the downside, so a little bit of a firming here mid-morning. Okay. But, you know, just not a lot of fresh news. And yesterday, wheat traded in step with corn to the upside eventually, and just not much support today from the corn market.
Yep, exactly. Okay, plus signs in the live cattle.
Definitely. I think the trade's looking for a firmer cash trade again this week. So we'll see if and when that develops, if it'll be sooner or later in the week. On the hog side of things, October contract being supported by the discount it holds to the cash market right now. But the back end of the market is under moderate to heavy pressure, and I think that's in anticipation the cash prices will soften.
Thank you, Brian. That's Brian Grady, Pro Farmer.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to AgriTalk and Dairy Week on AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us today. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and let's bring in Tom Vilsack. He's the former USDA Secretary and current President and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. As Secretary Vilsack, thanks for making time for us, and thanks for being part of Dairy Week here on AgriTalk.
Yeah, Chip, it's too bad that we can't be having this conversation live up there up in Wisconsin during what would be an opportunity to sort of showcase U.S. dairy to the world, but I guess an interview will have to do over the phone.
That's right. And I wish we could be there. I know that it's the same time next year, so I'll look forward to seeing you up there in Madison a year from right now. Sure hope that we can get that done. Yeah. So we're looking for the good news in agriculture. And when we do that, if you're going to look at the dairy industry, you got to look at the exports, Secretary Vilsack. It really is a good news story.
Chip, it is. And surprisingly so. with the disruption caused by the virus in food service, we would have seen a downturn in exports. But in fact, exports are up. We've sold about 165,000 metric tons more of product this year through the month of July than we did the previous year. About almost $500 million more in value, more milk solids going into exports, nearly 17% of all the dairy produced in the U.S. in 2020 has gone into the export market. So opportunities, obviously, for us to sell product in Southeast Asia, a lot of ingredients going there, a lot of cheese going out to Asia and South Korea and Japan. And of course, we have our number one market, Mexico, to look for, and whey sales in China, pretty key.
Yeah. Secretary Vilsack, 10 years ago, I'm not even sure that Asia was a targeted market for cheese products out of the U.S. And here we are. That's where the growth really seems to be.
Absolutely. I mean, take Japan, for example. We have a partnership now with an outfit called Strawberry Cone. It's a pizza delivery service. It's the third largest pizza delivery service in Japan. We just had a special promotion where they are using U.S. cheese as a promotional opportunity and selling a lot of pizza and a lot of U.S. cheese as a result in Japan. In fact, there's also a promotion that focused on a pizza with 2 pounds of cheese on it from the U.S. Just think about 2 pounds of cheese on
there
a pizza.
There you go.
You know, you might have to eat that one with a fork, even though that's not the way you're supposed to eat pizza.
Love it. You mentioned it, Secretary Vilsack, a challenging time that we're all going through. Why has dairy and U.S. dairy products in the export world been able to, you know, kind of take some of these COVID-19 related disruptions on head on?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, you know, dairy is such an important essential ingredient in any kind of meal preparation. So when people transitioned away from food service to more in-home delivery, to their home, it still played to the strengths of the utilization of dairy products. People began to bake more. That certainly involves dairy. So it was that. I think secondly, there was a transition made by the industry and by us at USDEC to move away from in-person meetings. We quickly transitioned to virtual meetings and we maintained the relationships. You know, I think the role of China rebuilding its hog industry after devastating African swine fever obviously has a role to play as well, because they're now purchasing whey in very large quantities. So it's a combination of things. But I think at the end of the day, I think people around the world are beginning to realize that U.S. dairy can provide a stable, secure, sustainably produced supply that's incredibly versatile and incredibly delicious and high quality and now affordably priced. So all of that basically provides opportunities for U.S. dairy.
I find it interesting, though, that one of the first things that you mentioned was the willingness to adapt to the situation and go to Zoom meetings or what, you know, the electronic meetings, virtual meetings, instead of the face-to-face to maintain the relationships. I mean, it speaks volumes about how important those relationships are.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, we look for ways to make connection. For example, we have a pretty significant market opportunity in the Middle East and North Africa. And so we lined ourselves up with well-known chefs in that market. We had them do a little promotional videos about how to use American cheeses in certain recipes. And we saw those vignettes or those videos viewed by literally hundreds of thousands of people in that market. So in a sense, this pandemic is causing us to rethink how we reach consumers, how we reach and encourage others to consider U.S. dairy. So it's going to change the way we do business. And I think for the better, we'll still have the in-person meetings when that gets back, when we're able to do that. But I think we'll complement that with a virtual presence as well.
Man, this is a silver lining story when you get into changing consumer behavior in a positive way coming out of this pandemic. That's fantastic. I love hearing that. So you mentioned the whey sales into China. Is that the U.S. dairy industry's biggest way of participating in what has turned into a pretty aggressive period of purchases of U.S. ag products by China?
Well, the unfortunate circumstance with phase one is that they really aren't purchasing much more on the way of dairy. In fact, we just sent a letter to Ambassador Lighthizer encouraging the ambassador to encourage his counterparts in China as they look to try to ramp up sales. Okay. To get on a track to meet their phase one responsibilities, that they ought to include more dairy. Whey is obviously incredibly important because, as I said, their hog industry, just to give you a sense of this, Chip, I think they've started 14,000 new hog farms this year in China.
Wow.
14,000 new farms.
Wow.
You know, we're talking about consolidation and, you know, wondering, you know, who's going to farm and so forth in China. 14,000 new hog operations. So they need a lot of product, obviously.
That's a lot of new wells right there.
Yeah, that's a lot of activity. So,
yeah.
It's a critical market. I mean, China's basically purchased about $7-8 billion of ag products through the first 7 months or so of the year. They really need to step that up if they're going to meet the 32 billion mark that they set for themselves in the phase one agreement. So hopefully, it leads in the latter part of the year to more dairy sales.
Okay. I always run out of time when I've got you on the show, Secretary Vilsack. So I want to move on to the EU. Tell me, how important was that, the court victory for the U.S. dairy industry so that we can continue to use the name Gruyere for Gruyere cheese?
Well, it is a marker in this battle to sort of constrain the use of the by the EU of geographic indications. It's an opportunity for us to basically encourage other countries to understand the necessity of protecting commonly used names, not just for our industry, but more importantly in those countries for their consumers. Because if you give somebody a monopoly on a particular named cheese, you can guarantee that price of that cheese is going to be a bit more expensive.
Right.
And so consumers will have less choice and will pay more for cheeses coming out of the EU. That's why it's important for the U.S. to continue to battle on every single front to sort of push back on the GIs. And, you know, we have had a recent agreement with the Italians on mozzarella, which was important. Mm-hmm. We also had a very significant assistance from Mexico in terms of the USMCA, a side letter where they acknowledged a number of common names. We're developing relationships and partnerships with South American countries to sort of push back on this whole notion of monopolizing cheese names.
Right. You know, I hope people understand just how important this is. And you mentioned the one that's number one on my list of potential trouble, and that's the mozzarella cheese. Because can you imagine going out and having to rename mozzarella cheese and call it pizza cheese or whatever you're going to call it and expect to have the same amount of sales? It would never happen, no, would it?
No, that's exactly right. And you'd spend a heck of a lot of money promoting something that you really shouldn't have to promote. That's right. That's exactly right. And so we're going to continue the battle. We're going to continue fighting them on every front. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Brexit conversations with the UK and the EU turn out, to whether or not the UK constrains itself or whether it can have a little bit more freedom in this area, because this is important. You know, the UK is the second largest importer of cheese in the world, and we'd like to be able to access that market, but not if we have to deal with constraints arbitrarily established by the EU.
That's so true. Real quick, last time you were on, you mentioned the UK and developing that market. What's the status there?
Well, obviously our government's still negotiating with the UK, and until we get some clarity in terms of their relationship with the EU, I'm not sure that those negotiations will eventually be culminated. But, you know, talks continue. But I'll tell you, ag is always going to be the most difficult thing for any of those conversations to resolve.
Right. Okay, 45 seconds here, but I got to ask you, how's implementation of USMCA going?
Well, we're still a little worried about our friends north. You know, we're asking them to take a look at the way in which they're managing the TRQs, because we don't think that that's going to open up market opportunities in the way the agreement was intended to open up. And frankly, if it doesn't, we hope our government basically triggers the process by which that can be reviewed.
Okay. Is that kind of at the top of your priority list or close to it right now?
Well, from a trade perspective, absolutely.
Yeah.
We would like to see $300 million of additional sales opportunities over the course of the next 4 or 5 years from USMCA, but it won't happen unless Canada lives up to the agreement.
Right. Gotcha. Secretary Vilsack, thank you so much. for joining us on Dairy Week. I'm glad you could.
All right, Chip, take it easy.
You bet. That is CEO and President of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. All right, guys, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to continue the Dairy Week celebration right here on AgriTalk.
Hi. America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Farm Journal Foundation for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. Seamless!
Jump there. Instead, I'm gonna say, go ahead and nominate, Davis.
Yes. Agriculture Future of America. The AFA Leaders Conference coming up on November 14. That's coming right up. I'll tell you what's really, really coming up. Accepting nominations until September 30. We're at the 29th today, Chip. Tomorrow, yes. agfuture.org/hope. I'm just going to read this quick. Resiliency, defined as the ability to quickly recover or adjust when met with difficulties or change. If you know somebody who embodies that spirit, agfuture.org/hope. Get your nominations in today, Chip.
All right, very good. There's something else that's going on today. You can join the Dairy Herd Management for a webinar titled Salmonella, a look at prevalence, prevention, and treatment protocol. That's at 1 p.m. Central. This webinar has been approved for 1 hour of continuing ed credits under the approval of the Registry of Approved Continuing Education, or RACE. You can visit dairyherd.com. to register for free. It's for free, but you got to register, Davis. You still got to register.
And if you're looking for continuing ed credits,
to do that.
Yeah, it's approved for continuing ed credits, and I think that's very important. Dairyherd.com to register for free. You got to register. 1 p.m. Central today.
Yes. Yeah. Now, let's talk a bit about tomorrow. All right?
All right.
Because I'm very excited. Tomorrow morning in our Dairy Week celebration, we are going to have a conversation about cow comfort with veterinarian Gordy Jones, who is a partner with, it's up in Wisconsin, Central Sands Dairy. But this guy is like a guru when it comes to cow comfort. And I am really looking forward to the conversation with Dr. Jones. And then we're going to get into the Farmer Forum tomorrow. And we've got Wisconsin Farm Bureau President Joe Bragger, who is a dairy producer there in Wisconsin. So we've got him, we've got Joe lined up and ready to go. And we've got Derek Josie. That probably sounds familiar to many of you out there. I hope that it does. He's from Tillamook, Oregon. And it's Derek Talks to Cows Josie on Twitter. Okay.
All right.
Some of the social media work that Derek has done, it is really, really impressive the way that he has worked to connect his dairy to consumers. And through the Tillamook Cheese Co-op out there, it's really cool. So I am really looking forward to having Joe Bragger and Derek Josie on with us tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. A lot of
fun. Very good.
You mentioned the Heroes 2.0 in the news this morning, Davis. I want to hit some of the details of that. We're looking at $2.2 trillion of funding in the Heroes Act 2.0. Obviously, this has not been voted on yet, but we've always wondered, does the next round of CARES or whatever it's going to be called, Heroes, does the next round include some of the much needed help for agriculture that people have been asking for? So I went through highlighted some of the important things. The bill does provide payments for livestock and poultry that were depopulated due to processing plant shutdowns and backups because of the health emergency.
That's a big one.
There are some payment limitations in there. Payments may not exceed the average market value of the market-ready livestock or poultry on the date of depopulation. But boy, I tell you what, for the guys that did have to euthanize some animals out there, getting a market value from that day would be life-saving. Mm-hmm. Animal disease prevention and management response, there's $300 million in there for that. There is the bill establishes a program to make facility – this one I think is so interesting. The bill establishes a program to make facility upgrades and planning grants to existing meat and processing and poultry processors to help them move to federal inspection to be able to sell their products across state lines. So lockers would be able to process and sell rather than just process an animal for you. So that's a big one. The bill also provides $1.25 billion to assist contract growers of poultry and livestock. Okay. Let's get to dairy. There is a dairy direct donation program in here. The bill provides $500 million to pay for milk to be processed into dairy products and donated to nonprofit entities. The bill provides necessary cash flow assistance to small and mid-sized dairies that have grown over the last 7 years by establishing supplemental margin coverage based on the difference between 2019 actual production and the dairy margin coverage production history. So those that have grown over the past few years can upgrade there. The bill provides $500 million for USDA to carry out a recourse loan program for dairy processors, packagers, and merchandisers. Bill supports DMC. Bill provides $500 million in additional funding to support specialty crop farmers to address COVID-19 specialty crop supply chain issues. So that they've been looking for. Another one for the specialty crop provides $350 million for additional funding to support local farmers, farm markets. This one is in here. Support for processed commodities. The bill provides direct support for biofuels plants, cotton textile mills, that are impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. So we've been looking for where that could happen. Well, it also amends the CCC Charter Act to add authority for the secretary to deal with removal and disposal of livestock and poultry due to supply chain disruptions. The bill amends the CCC Charter Act to require congressional notification before distributing CCC funding. There's some conservation issues in there. It increases SNAP benefits by 15%. It waives the mandatory work requirements for SNAP for 1 year. If it's going to be a $2.2 trillion bill, I guess it better have a lot in it. Well, this one does look like it's got a whole lot in it. No doubt about
kinda
that.
Kind of does.
Yep. All right. Thank you so much for listening today. You got to come back this afternoon. Sal Gilberte from Tucrium is going to be our guest. And like I said, tomorrow morning, Gordy Jones and at Farmer Forum with Joe from Wisconsin and Derek from Oregon. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.